Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. We've got a lot to get to today. Lamar Waldron is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about this is the fourth Republican president to betray the Kurds. And we're going to do a deep dive into this and what the consequences of all this will be. I'm beginning to think that Donald Trump is really genuinely, seriously trying to create a war in the Middle East because he thinks it'll help his reelection. You'll recall in 2012, when Barack Obama was standing for reelection, Trump repeatedly tweeted that Obama was going to start a war with Iran any day because it would help him get reelected. This is how he thinks. This is what he has said. And now the Washington Post is reporting that we are sending troops and equipment to Saudi Arabia right now for a possible war with Iran. We are sending two fighter squadrons, an Air Expeditionary Wing headquarters unit, two Patriot missile batteries, and one air defense unit, in addition to 1,800 troops, into Saudi Arabia right now. As Saudi Arabia is bombing the bejesus out of civilians in Yemen, launching a murderous war that has been condemned by the world, Trump is supporting Turkey and continuing to make money off his 119 investments in the country of Turkey, including his Trump Towers, as he sells out the Kurds and they're being slaughtered. The most recent real eyebrow raiser was when Fox News was doing a story, and the Fox News reporter from Syria was showing a picture of a 7-year-old girl who had her leg amputated and was covered with blood. And the Fox News host breaks into tears. This is going on in our name. It's our money, our tax dollars, our soldiers, our weaponry being used to support Saudi Arabia explicitly and directly. And then Turkey, and keep in mind, Turkey just bought a huge anti-missile system from Russia. Whose loyalties are going where? I've been saying this for a while now, this is more and more looking to be like the beginning of a World War I kind of scenario. I mean, it's bad enough that Trump is trying to pump the presidency, to basically hustle the presidency, his office, in order to make profit for himself and the Trump crime family. It's bad enough that he's continuing to run this hotel in Washington, D.C., when the lease in the Park Service says that if the person who is renting that property from the federal government, keep in mind, the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. is not owned by Donald Trump. That building and the land that it's on are owned by the U.S. National Park Service. The building was the first major post office built in Washington, D.C., built back in the 19th century. And the building was leased to the Trump Organization before Donald Trump declared his candidacy for office. And in the lease, it says that if the leaseholder becomes an elected official or an appointed official, then they have to give up the lease, which means that Trump Hotel D.C. has to be, like, you know, given a Marriott or something to some other hotel company who doesn't have a senior officer who is president or any other federal officer. But Trump continues to do that in flagrant violation of the federal emoluments prohibition in the Constitution that the president may not take foreign money. I mean, this appears twice in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 5, where it defines what the compensation is for the president. And it says that the president shall be paid and shall receive no additional money outside of his paycheck. So there's two emoluments exceptions, but that's domestic. Then there's, of course, the foreign one. And then he goes and says, oh, yeah, G7, come on down to Florida to the Doral. It's a crime just to even suggest that. But last night, NBC, specifically Heidi Presbola and another reporter, Anna, I'm missing her name, but in any case, the two of them wrote this report for NBC News pointing out that Donald Trump has not only made millions of dollars, initially $10 million and then, you know, up to $5 million a year, we're not sure exactly how much he's making right now, from having his name on the so-called Trump Towers in Istanbul, Turkey. So he's making millions from this. When he was pushing his Muslim ban, you remember that? Back 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, Trump was pushing his Muslim ban. And on the list of Muslim countries was Turkey. And Erdogan called him up and said, you do that, and I'm going to take your name off Trump Tower, and you're no longer going to get licensing fees. And Trump immediately backed away and took Turkey off the list. So NBC News pointed that out, but they additionally pointed out that Donald Trump owns positions in 219 different investment vehicles based in Turkey. He's got a lot of money in Turkey, and he's making a lot of profit out of Turkey. And then Erdogan calls up and says, hey, we'd like you to give us permission, basically, to slaughter the Kurds. And so Trump's rationale yesterday was that the Kurds did not fight in World War II. Well, it turns out they did. It was called the Iraq Levies. They were an allied World War II force. They were made up of Kurds, Assyrians, Armenians, and Yazidis, and some Turkmen. By the way, these are the groups, these five ethnic groups, the Assyrians, the Kurds, the Armenians, the Turkmen, and the Yazidis. These are the five groups, along with a Christian group in northern Syria, that make up the Syrian Democratic Forces. We're referring to them kind of generically as the Kurds, but it's actually the Syrian Democratic Forces who are being bombed right now by Turkey with U.S. bombs, you know, bombs made in Ohio and Indiana, dropping on northern Syria on Christian and Kurdish areas. And they did fight. They just served under the British and the French instead of under Eisenhower. How long are we going to allow Donald Trump? Now he's set up a genocide for profit scheme. Is this not the ultimate impeachable crime? Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to point out the hypocrisy of Donald Trump, and I'm sure it's clear to everybody. He says we should let the Kurds take care of this problem themselves because they're so far away. Yet 3 weeks ago, or however long ago it was, when that Saudi oil installation got struck, we had troops over there almost instantaneously to protect those interests.
Right. And we don't even need to import oil from Saudi Arabia any longer, although we still are.
Human lives mean nothing, but oil interests, those are certainly worth protecting and sending our troops over.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard too much about that.
That is an important point, Mark. And it really does highlight the hypocrisy of these guys. Yeah, I'm with you. Thanks a lot for the call. Horatio, it says that you disagree with me. You go to the front of the line. What, you disagree the Kurds aren't protecting against ISIS? Seriously?
No. You know who really was with taking care of ISIS was the Russians and Assad. The only thing that, remember, we didn't even want to give guns to the Kurds because this was going to happen. They always wanted land. The Kurds are nothing but a bunch of opportunities. They took their opportunity, and guess what? It didn't pan out. Hey, you know?
So these ISIS fighters, I've seen different numbers, 10,000 to 50,000 ISIS fighters, that are being held by the Kurds in prisons where the Kurds had captured them, in the regions where the Kurds live, where ISIS tried to take control and the Kurds took back control. You're saying that wasn't actually all the Kurds, that was actually the Russians?
Yeah, remember, Tom, the Russians, after they took Raqqa, the ISIS were getting backed up. And all of a sudden, America came and made that free zone for them. And then they started arresting them and putting them in prison. But, man, the Russians had the ISIS on the run. But we gave them a free space.
Come somehow, on. No, I just don't see where Russia gives a hoot. Well, maybe they do. They've had their own problem with, particularly in Chechnya, with, Islamic terror. But Horatio, I'm sorry. I'm just going to disagree with you. Jason in Winter Haven, Florida. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Good to talk to you again. They played a clip the other day on MSNBC where Donald Trump admitted during the 2016 election cycle that he had a major conflict of interest in Turkey, and he built towers there in Istanbul.
Yeah, no, he's taking millions from them, and this is why I think, and I've said this on the air, I believe that if we ever get to listen to the tape or read the transcript of Trump's conversation with Erdogan on Sunday night, that what Erdogan threatened him with was economic. That Erdogan said, we're going to take your name off Trump Towers. Erdogan threatened this before, when Trump was doing his Muslim ban, and he included Turkey in the list. And Erdogan called him up and said, I'm going to take your name off Trump Tower. And boom, Trump changed his tune. I think Erdogan did the exact same thing again. And he said, I want the Kurds. I want to take out the Kurds. And Trump was like, okay, just let me keep my Trump Tower. The Trump crime family, the grift has to continue.
Never thought I'd see the Republicans shoot somebody worse than Bush, but they have.
And worse than Reagan, and worse than, it's mind-boggling.
Flying downward.
Yeah,
thank
it
you.
Really is.
Thank
good to talk to you. I want to emphasize this point, that if the Democrats, specifically if Nancy Pelosi, she's driving this train, the impeachment train, and if she screws this up in any way and it doesn't work out, Donald Trump is going to feel so empowered. It's going to be like after the initial riots, basically, when Mussolini was rising to power, or the same thing with Franco in Spain, the same thing with Hitler after he got out of jail after the beer putsch in Munich. As these guys, these grifter, totalitarian, wannabe dictators who actually end up as dictators, the way that they make that transition is by being challenged, seriously challenged, and winning. This is very, very dangerous. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have one chance to take Donald Trump down. There's that old saying, if you're going to shoot the king, you better kill the king, or words to that effect. And of course, nobody is suggesting anything like shooting and killing. But the point is, if you go after the king and you don't succeed in bringing him down, he will destroy you. And there is no doubt in my mind that if the Democrats in the House successfully pass articles of impeachment out of the House and it goes to the Senate and there's a trial in the Senate and Mitch McConnell does his magic and screws it up so that Donald Trump skates, or if the case wasn't made well enough by Pelosi and the Democrats in the articles of impeachment so that Trump skates, or if John Roberts inserts himself, he will be the as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, he will be the judge in the trial. The jury will be the Senate. The representatives of the House will be bringing the charges. So we saw all this in the Clinton impeachment. If this doesn't work, Donald Trump is going to be like Mussolini, like Franco, like Hitler, like so many of these tin pot dictators. Frankly, Erdogan. Erdogan was sliding in popularity. He left the country. The military said, okay, he's gone. We're going to take over. And he got himself back in the country and he executed thousands of people. And my recollection is that he imprisoned over 30,000 people. I may be wrong on the exact number. 18,000 also sticks in my head. But in any case, he put his opponents in prison. And he now rules Turkey with an absolute iron fist, to the point that he feels comfortable calling up the President of the United States and saying, you're going to lose your revenue from your 119 investments in Turkey, including your Trump Tower, if you don't let me slaughter the Kurds. So if you want to see an Erdogan-style presidency in the United States, if you want to see our Democratic Republic slide down the tubes, if you want to see this whole thing fall apart, this 240-year experiment in the ideals of the Enlightenment, well, we don't want to see it. The if obviously is if Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats screw this up, or if Mitch McConnell and the Republicans successfully break it up, in my opinion, it will be the end of our republic. Donald Trump doesn't understand what a small r Republican government is. He doesn't understand even the functions of government. He's a totally corrupt autocrat. He has been his entire life. He believes that everybody else is corrupt, which is why he goes to the head of the FBI, Jim Comey, and says, hey, you know, let's cut a little slack here for Mike Flynn. It's why he hires Mike Flynn when Mike Flynn is being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars by Turkey as his national security advisor. Oh, it doesn't matter. You know, everybody's corrupt. And I'm guessing that Trump has a lifetime of experience that tells him that everybody's corrupt. I'll bet he's bought off New York City housing inspectors. I'll bet he's bought off New York City aldermen, or, you know, whatever their city council is called. I'll bet he's bought off New York City mayors. I'll bet he bought off Rudy Giuliani when Giuliani was mayor. Trump is corrupt, and he spreads corruption all around him. His fixer, his handling the corruption for him guy, Michael Cohen, is now sitting in prison for Trump's corruption. And when, you know, the old saying, you know, power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. If Trump survives an impeachment attempt, he will believe, and perhaps correctly, that he now has absolute power in the United States. And that will be a disaster for our country and for the world. Now, moving along, there's a few other things going on. These two guys who are buddies of Rudy Giuliani's, who were born in Ukraine, who were arrested at Dulles Airport, preparing to flee the country. This is apparently why they busted them when they did, because these guys were about to get on a plane out of the United States. It turns out that what they were doing was essentially bribing Congressman One. It appears that Congressman One was Pete Sessions, although I've only seen that in two different places. I can't absolutely confirm that. But they were apparently bribing or, you know, offering illegal campaign contributions or paid illegal campaign contributions to a member of Congress to essentially lobby the Trump administration to get Marie Yovanovitch, who was our ambassador to Ukraine, to get her fired. Now, she was apparently one of the good guys. She was apparently concerned about corruption in Ukraine, and these guys were apparently on the side of corruption in Ukraine. And I'm not talking about corruption as a code word for Joe Biden's son. I'm talking about real corruption. The charges have just been filed. The grand jury has laid this out. The grand jury says, this is the charge. The defendants conspired to circumvent federal laws against foreign influence. So this wasn't just a couple of rich guys running a business down in Florida who happened to be born in Ukraine, throwing a couple hundred thousand dollars into a PAC run by Don Trump Jr. Apparently that was part of a larger campaign using Ukrainian money, foreign money, to influence the Trump administration. Back to the indictment. The defendants conspired to circumvent the federal laws against foreign influence by engaging in a scheme to funnel foreign money to candidates for federal and state office so that dependents could buy political influence with candidates. And then they go on to say at around the same time that Parnas and Furman, the two guys who were arrested, the Rudy Giuliani's two buddies who got arrested trying to flee apparently to Ukraine or Russia, around the same time Parnas and Furman committed to raising those funds for Congressman One, that Pete Sessions, presumably, Parnas met with Congressman One and sought Congressman One's assistance in causing the U.S. government to remove or recall the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Parnas's efforts to remove the ambassador were conducted, at least in part, at the request of one or more Ukrainian officials. And Maria Yovanovitch is, like, she's one of the people that Congress really wants to talk about, or to talk with, rather. And the Trump administration is saying, oh, no, we're not going to let her go. She's not going to talk to anybody. This is getting very, very interesting. Giuliani associates tied to Ukraine scandal arrested on campaign finance charges as they're trying to flee the country. And it's not just campaign finance. It's trying to essentially bribe a congressman and influence U.S. foreign policy and get a U.S. ambassador fired. This is mind-boggling corruption coming out of the Trump administration.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the people who fund them. And the picture, there's this picture of Trump with these two guys. On the other side of the picture is who? Is that Don Jr.? Well, there's another one with Mike Pence. I've recently discovered the powerful health benefits of CBD oil. Louise and I have been using New Leaf Natural CBD oil and love it. CBD oil doesn't get you high. It's non-intoxicating, so it's great if you want the health benefits of cannabinoids without the mind-altering effects of medical marijuana. CBD is non-toxic and has potent pain-relieving and anti-inflammatory properties. And the brand I use is New Leaf Naturals. New Leaf Naturals is the highest quality CBD oil on the market. 100% organic, highly concentrated, no additional additives, grown in the USA, and the only ingredient is hemp, so the product remains in its most pure and simple form. Go to newleafnaturals.com. That's NUleafNaturals.com. And save 30% off and get free shipping in the U.S. when you use the code TOM, spelled T-H-O-M. Go to NULeafNaturals.com for premium cannabinoid wellness. There's only one place, NULeafNaturals.com. NULeafNaturals.com, code TOM, spelled T-H-O-M, NULeafNaturals.com. Seth Abramson tweeting. This, you know, Seth is such a great source. It's just absolutely fascinating. Furman, just arrested trying to flee the country, met personally with Trump twice in the days before Ukraine froze all Manafort investigations in April 2018. Think there was a connection? And then Seth Abramson goes on, it's looking like these two men may have assisted Giuliani, Trump in shaking down Ukraine to end an investigation of Manafort, who Trump was telling friends months earlier in January 2018 could bring him down in exchange for business coming their way from Trump policies. It doesn't get worse than this. I mean, it really and truly doesn't get worse than this. It's just amazing. I'm going to retweet Seth Abramson's tweet. These are shocking, at the very least. On the line with us, my old buddy Lamar Waldron. We worked together on a couple of books, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, and Robert Kennedy, National Security, The Mafia, and the Assassination of Martin Luther King, and Ultimate Sacrifice, which is about the JFK assassination. Lamar is the author of The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination and Watergate, The Hidden History, which we're going to get into in just a minute. The question, will Trump and Barr go down like Nixon and his Attorney General John Mitchell, who spent 19 months in prison? So my old friend and collaborator, Lamar Waldron, welcome back, Lamar.
Great to be with you again, Tom. I just can't believe how much news has been coming out today and yesterday and everything, but it's just like the old Nixon Watergate days when it's, you know, if we think these have been heavy news days for the past couple weeks, put on your seatbelt, because the next week, the next month, frankly, the next year is going to be more of the same.
And they just busted two of Rudy Giuliani's buddies who were born in Ukraine, Dulles, trying to flee the country. Apparently what these guys were doing was trying to bribe Congressman Pete Sessions to get the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine fired on behalf of some Ukrainian oligarchs. I mean, it's insane. But in the meantime, BBC is reporting 60,000 people are fleeing Kurds from their territory in northern Syria in the face of this invasion from Turkey. I mean, you know, this is terrible, terrible stuff that Donald Trump would turn his back on our allies, on the Kurds. It turns out they actually did fight with us in World War II, not as a nation, but, you know, there was it was called the Iraq group or something like that. And it was made up of five different ethnic groups who make up that coalition right now, but principally the Kurds. They fought on our behalf in World War II. And I understand from you, Lamar, that Trump is not the first Republican president to screw the Kurds.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, this has been going on since the days of Nixon. And I'd like to just kind of briefly go back in time, starting with right now, because the other big thing is, why is Trump doing this now when it seems like he needs all of his Republican supporters and now he's angering them? But as your listeners will learn over the next hour, there's usually never like one reason Trump is doing things. There are always several sleazy reasons that all come together, because in this case, you've got his numerous business ties, more than 100 business ties to Turkey, including the big Trump towers, not just one tower, but two. You've got Turkey and whatever they know about Khashoggi's murder, the American-Saudi journalist who was murdered in Turkey. And there was a lot of credible reporting at the time that his body was even disposed of in Turkey. So whether that's true or not, you know, Turkey knows a lot about Khashoggi's murder. And so that's pressure and leverage that they have on Trump. But most importantly, and again, this will be a recurring theme throughout the hour, is Trump and Putin. I mean, basically, Trump is giving Syria to Putin and Turkey, just like the Germans and Russia carved up Poland at the start of World War II.
But Turkey is part of NATO and wants to be part of the European Union. How does that, there's an obvious conflict between that and being in bed with Putin's Russia.
Well, again, though, you've got a guy who's essentially an elected dictator. Of course, we should all remember a lot of dictators, like Adolf Hitler, were elected. So, in other words, it's whatever Erdogan wants to stay in power, that's what's important, not Turkey as a nation,
right,
not what's good for the Turkish people,
yeah,
just like with Trump. And that's one reason I think Trump and Erdogan get along as well as they relatively do. But the other big gift to Putin in all this is the open skies policy. That's been, you know, just a tiny little footnote.
Explain
in most
that.
Reports. Well, that basically says, you remember the old days in the 60s when we'd read about the U-2 spy planes and Russia shot down one? Well, in the sense of ending the Cold War, we have this open skies policy that says basically we can fly surveillance planes over Russia and Russia can fly surveillance planes over us. In other words, we're not going to do anything, hopefully, that treaties don't allow, and we expect Russia to be the same way. Well, now Trump, I think, is taking advantage of all this horrible publicity about our Kurdish allies starting to be slaughtered, and that they're going to end this open skies policy, which, you know, it's just a total incomplete gift to Putin, one of many that Trump keeps giving. So, again, like I say, there's a lot of reasons this is happening now. And this is the fourth time a Republican president has betrayed our Kurdish allies. The third time was back in 1991 under President George Bush Sr. after the first Iraq war, when, if I'm sure you recall, Bush Sr. urged the Kurds to rise up against Saddam, who,
yes,
Bush, you know, because the Saudis didn't want him to, had not actually deposed Saddam after we spent all the money and lives to invade Iraq that first time. Only once Bush got the Kurds whipped up to rebel against Saddam and hopefully overthrow him, then he wouldn't support them, and they were slaughtered. And that's purely on Republican President Bush Sr.
And there were mass graves. I mean, this was like on the order of tens to hundreds of thousands of people who were slaughtered, was it not?
And it was a huge thing. But even that, like I say, that was the third time, just 3 years earlier, under the Reagan-Bush administration. And I almost hesitate to say Reagan-Bush, because by that time, you know, I think it was mostly the Bush administration in waiting, because Reagan, you know, was starting to have his Alzheimer's and memory problems. You know, on March 16th, 1988, over 3,000 Kurds were killed. Over 7,000 were injured with poison gas, you know, the kind of large-scale poison gas attack that I don't think has been seen since, what, World War I, maybe?
Yeah, and it was outlawed by international convention after World War I because of the horrors of the poison gas attacks.
And that was all at the same time Iran-Contra was unraveling, and you had Edwin Meese, the Reagan attorney general, was involved with all these scandals and everything. But, you know, there are even indications, and you may know more about this than I, you know, that Donald Rumsfeld and the Reagan-Bush administration actually had some sort of role in the lead up to that gas attack.
There's a famous photograph of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. And it was from the trip where he went over there on behalf of the Reagan administration to sell Saddam Hussein weapons. And apparently this came out when Bush Jr. was trying to sell us on a war with Saddam. It came out that among the things that he was selling them were at least the precursor chemicals to make these poison gases.
And so it's just horrible what keeps happening. But now let's dial back to the first time that our Kurdish allies were betrayed by a Republican president. That's all started under President Nixon. And this is in the early 1970s. And he's got his horrible national security advisor, Secretary of State guy, Henry Kissinger, who I'm not even sure. Kissinger may or may not be under indictment in some countries today for some of the stuff Kissinger did back then. I believe there are countries that Kissinger may not be able to travel to because he would be arrested. And so under the Nixon administration, Nixon himself, and we'll get to all the parallels between he and Trump shortly, but basically at that time, we were against Iraq because of Saddam Hussein, but Nixon was good friends with Iran at that time. People, younger people, can't imagine a time when Iran was our second biggest ally in the entire Middle East after Israel.
Right, and this was because of the Shah, because we had placed this dictator there.
Exactly. It was funneling money to Nixon, and then Nixon set up this deal with the Kurds and them getting slaughtered back then.
So the Shah was paying off Nixon under the table?
Oh, of course, of course.
Amazing, amazing. Lamar Waldron is with us. Watergate, The Hidden History, his most recent book.
So the Shah of Iran was paying off Nixon from the 1968 election, again in the 1972 election. So we see that desire to get the help from foreign countries on the behalf of Nixon to win elections. And so what happened there was the Shah was against Iraq. Nixon and Kissinger funded the Kurds to kind of, you know, do actions against Iraq. But then the Shah, who was thoroughly corrupt, horrible, brutal dictator, cut a deal with the horrible, brutal dictator Saddam Hussein on the waterway that runs between those two countries that leads to the Strait of Hormuz and stuff. And once they had cut that deal, then the U.S. just ended, you know, the support for the Kurds after stirring them up against Saddam. And then, of course, Saddam is attacking them in retribution. So, I mean, it's almost shocking that the Kurds would ever believe what any American president, especially a Republican, says. But the mainstream media, you know, goes out of their way not to point out that it's always been Republican presidents that do this. But again, to get back to Nixon and Trump, you know, the Shah was not the only foreign dictator giving money to Nixon to help him win elections. There was the U.S.-backed junta in Greece. There was Marcos in the Philippines. And there was, of course, the dictator of South Vietnam, who basically threw the peace deal that was supposed to occur in the fall of 1968, and that was just to help Nixon win the election. You know, they extended the Vietnam War by another 2 or 3 years. So Nixon, like Trump, wanted both the foreign assistance to win elections in 68 and 72, but also just to literally pocket that money. Because, I'm sorry, what was that again, Tom?
Does this have something to do with why there has not been a Democratic president who has betrayed the Kurds, but there's been a series of Republican ones that betraying the Kurds always involved a Republican president getting something, cash or campaign help, and the Democrats, by and large, are at least not that corrupt?
I would say
Or is it just
that
an accident of history?
No, I don't think it's an accident. I mean, basically, you know, Joe Biden is a little conservative for my taste in a lot of ways, but he really knocked it out of the park. I believe it was yesterday when he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that Trump would do anything to win an election. And that's what's at the heart of all of this. Nixon, you know, Reagan, Bush Sr., Bush Jr., Trump, they will do anything to win an election. Nixon will commit treason, you know, and extend this Vietnam War at the cost of thousands of American lives, you know, just to win an election. You know, Reagan and Bush, with the whole October surprise thing, keeping our hostages in Iran and torpedoing that deal right before that election. And so, you know, I to me, that's what it is. And I think there is a lot to learn about Trump, though, when you look at, you know, everything that Nixon did to get elected and stay in office.
Yeah,
you know, he took all this illicit money, help from organized crime. It's just astounding, but again, just tremendous parallels to Trump.
Well, let's go down that road when we come back. We're talking with Lamar Waldron, his most recent book, Watergate, The Hidden History. Really worth checking out. Bloomberg reports there's an increasing number of people concerned about their wealth due to the fear we may be entering a larger economic crisis than 2008. If you've been paying attention, you know the Dow recently had its sixth largest point loss in history, and the stock market continues to show extreme volatility. Meanwhile, central bank gold purchases have risen to a six-decade high, sending gold prices higher. CNBC and the World Gold Council reports Russia and China are swapping out U.S. dollars from their own portfolios, investing in safer, more liquid assets like gold. And what makes things even more suspicious, the U.S. Federal Reserve reportedly holds the most gold of all central banks. What's everyone getting ready for? If you share the gut feeling that something is soon to go south with the global economy, call my friends at ITM Trading at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Proper gold and silver strategy will help secure your entire wealth portfolio. Call ITM Trading at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Ask them for their free gold protection guide and secure your wealth while you still can. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Lamar, you were talking about how Nixon was taking bribes from the Shah of Iran. He was enriching himself from foreign dictators. Trump is, in my opinion, frankly, I think that the reason why Donald Trump said to Erdogan, okay, fine, go ahead and slaughter the Kurds, was because Erdogan called him up and said, hey, you know, you've got 119 different business interests in Turkey, not to mention Trump Tower. Erdogan threatened to take Trump's name off Trump Tower back when Trump had put Turkey on the list of Muslim states for his Muslim ban, and you know, Trump jumped real quickly on that one. I think this is all about the money. Are there more parallels between Trump and Nixon in this regard, you know, being willing to be bought off by foreigners?
It's just horrendous, and I think it's especially appropriate now that Trump is in re-election mode to look at all the things that Nixon was trying to do to get re-elected, which, of course, he was. We hope Trump isn't. But, of course, Nixon, even after wide reporting on the Watergate break-ins and that it pretty clearly involved the White House, Nixon was re-elected overwhelmingly. So let's go look. So Nixon, since the start of his political career, was using using organized crime, money, and connections to help him in his elections, first to Congress, then the Senate, then, you know, when he first tried to run for president against JFK, and then when he actually, finally won the presidency, and then when he was running again. And, of course, Trump has his organized crime ties going back to at least the 1980s, probably the 1970s. I mean, they both engage in massive money laundering. I mean, Richard Nixon at one time with his money man, D.B. Rebozo, they actually bought a coin laundry to help launder their illicit money, but that was when they were doing things on a smaller scale when he was vice president. You know, now Nixon as president was laundering his money in a much bigger way. But Trump, since the 1980s at least, has been laundering money. I've read that there were only two developers in New York City in the 80s that would sell an expensive condominium or co-op or building to a blind attorney, a blind trust, where you did not know who was actually buying it. Most developers wouldn't do that because they knew that was the mafia either laundering money or foreigners in just starting in the late 1980s to be Russians laundering money. And so, you know, they have the money laundering in common. You know, Nixon got so many bribes and payoffs, again, not just from foreign dictators, but literally from the mafia. And so, I think as things unfold, we're going to find more and more. Of course, organized crime today, as Hillary Clinton once didn't say but agreed with, you know, Russia is basically a big organized crime state on a state level now at this point. That's what they are. And so when you look at it that way, yeah, Trump is just getting all this money. They both had tax scams. Nixon's famous "I am not a crook" statement was not about Watergate. It was about his taxes. Right. And, of course, once his tax scams were found out and he had to repay them with more illicit bribe money, that's when the tradition came about that every president's taxes get audited and everybody releases their taxes, which Trump won't do. I mean, they're both such experts at manipulating the mainstream media. I mean, Nixon, like I say, 5 months after the Watergate break-ins were in every newspaper in the country, Nixon gets reelected by a landslide because right. He knows how to manipulate the mainstream press. Trump seems like he has lost that touch within the last week or two, but I'm not sure that he won't regain that.
Oh, it'll come back. We have just a minute to the break. John Mitchell. Nixon's AG, Bill Barr, Trump's AG.
Well, they were just so, John Mitchell was basically a consigliere for Nixon. In other words, his job wasn't being Attorney General of the United States. It was being Nixon's fixer, basically. And in fact, he left the Attorney General position to become campaign manager, but he kept pretty much doing the same thing. And that's a huge similarity we see with Barr today. In other words, Barr is doing now for Trump exactly what he did for Bush Sr., where he's leading this re-election PR campaign in addition to doing all these political favors that in the case of Bush Sr. kept Bush Sr. from going to prison because Barr engineered those five pardons. And now it appears that Barr just has his fingers in every stinking pie that comes up in relation to all these impeachable offenses.
Do you think he could go down like John Mitchell did?
I certainly hope so, but there's some reasons that might not happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So what's really going on with Donald Trump? How does this whole thing work? How does a mob boss put together being president? Nixon did it before. We're learning about this. Four Republican presidents now have betrayed the Kurds since Richard Nixon began this whole song and dance. In every case, in exchange for money or political favors. This is just absolutely mind-boggling. Lamar, I don't know if you wanted to get into Paul Manafort and Ukraine, but do you see parallels now between what Trump is doing or what's happening in the United States with regard to our elections here and what Paul Manafort was doing in 2010 in Ukraine?
Oh, tremendous parallels there. But before I dive into those, I did want to point out stonewalling and obstruction by Nixon and by John Mitchell is what kept Nixon in office for more than 2 years after Watergate. The other thing that kept Nixon in office that I think bears repeating now is the way that Nixon and his Attorney General John Mitchell, and even after Mitchell was not Attorney General anymore, he was still Nixon's closest advisor, going after critics and whistleblowers and leakers. And under Nixon, that turned fatal at least twice. In other words, Nixon would try to unleash the IRS. He would have the FBI harass his critics. He would, go after them in the press. But in the case of America's most famous journalist, Jack Anderson, who had a string of exposés against Richard Nixon, Nixon, according to Mark Feldstein, professor at the University of Maryland, a former journalist, a very distinguished professor there, he wrote a great book, and it's pretty well documented that Richard Nixon ordered the White House plumbers, the people who were supposed to stop leaks, to assassinate Jack Anderson.
Whoa.
In other words, Nixon literally gave that order. Apparently, as much as anyone can tell, the only reason Nixon did not succeed in that was that one of the Watergate plumbers, a guy whose real name was Frank Fiorini, but he had changed it from that Italian-sounding name, he was a mob associate, to Frank Sturgis. And Frank Sturgis was good friends with Jack Anderson from the days when Frank Sturgis was a soldier of fortune in the mountains of Cuba with Castro. So apparently that's the only reason that didn't happen. And then the other big leaker, who started leaking after the White House plumbers were formed, was Daniel Ellsberg. And again, just a month and a half before the final Watergate break-in, there were four, not just one, Daniel Ellsberg was targeted to be, I'm paraphrasing here, he uses a more exact term, basically permanently silenced at a big demonstration in Washington. And Ellsberg, you know, will always say that in any media appearance. I can always tell the journalists are skeptical that Nixon had actually ordered that Ellsberg be killed. But what the mainstream media doesn't ever talk about either, and what Ellsberg doesn't even know, is that two of the Watergate plumbers, Frank Sturgis and Bernard Barker, were actively working for one of America's most ruthless godfathers at the time, Santo Trafficante, big supporter of Richard Nixon, gave Nixon lots of money, including two different million-dollar bribes. And both Sturgis and Barker has successfully participated in assassinations in the past for the mafia and for the CIA. So I take Ellsberg very seriously. So that makes me worry about the current, I think we're up to at least three whistleblowers right now, and look at all the critics of Trump. And, you know, do I think William Barr would ever order a whistleblower killed? No, I don't. Has Trump threatened to have people killed in the past? There's reporting that he has. So I really worry about the safety of these whistleblowers. And I'll just say this before we move on to Ukraine. I am totally and completely confident that Donald Trump has been told the name of that first main whistleblower.
Yeah,
I based on everything I have read, everything I know.
And he's been whipping up this. So I don't know who it is. We need to find out who it is.
Exactly.
As a way of telegraphing to his more violent followers, find and nail this guy. I'm not going to tell you who he is, but, you know, find and nail him.
I worry about all of that, which now brings us back to Ukraine and the first time that Paul Manafort helped one of Putin's allies get elected president. This is back in 2010.
This is Yanukovych, right?
Yanukovych, exactly. And it's real important because most of your listeners are like me 20 years ago. I knew nothing about Ukraine. But luckily, I had a friend who did a great series of graphic novels about a young woman fighting in Ukraine, for Ukraine, in World War II. So he was going over to Ukraine, doing research, married a Ukrainian. So I was following Ukraine at a time, you know, 10 years ago, when most people weren't, you know, because one of my best friends was over there all the time. And what's important to know, and what he always said, and the research bears it out, Ukraine, 60% of Ukraine, the middle and the western part of Ukraine, hate Russia. You know, they hate Russia because going back to the 1930s, when Russia, under Stalin, grabbed Ukraine, and then to put down their resistance, he basically instituted this nationwide famine that killed millions of people. So, you know, that has not been forgotten in Ukraine. Those people hate Russia, you know, for what they did, you know, for years when they were a satellite state, a captive state, but especially going back to 33. So 60% of Ukraine hates Russia. Now, what Stalin and later Khrushchev did, though, they had a lot of Russians move to the eastern part of Ukraine. So today, about 60% of Ukrainians hate Russia, and 40% of Ukrainians like Russia, or actually, you know, are of Russian extraction. So,
well, also in Crimea, you know, Russia had that giant submarine base there, and that's where so many of the Russian military went there, served there, and then retired there because it's just absolutely beautiful territory and beautiful climate, and that kind of repopulated the local area.
And I would rather live in the Crimea 100 times more than any place, you know, than Moscow,
sure.
St. Petersburg. So, you know, yes,
especially in the winter.
So, So the question is, how did Putin's ally get elected president of a country where 60% of the people hate anything to do with Russia? Well, the answer is Paul Manafort and some other political consultants who've done work for Trump. But Manafort was the main one, because what Manafort did, and remember, Manafort was a big part of Republican politics and elections going back to the late 70s here in America. Right. I mean, he was huge
with the Reagan campaign and the Bush campaign.
Exactly.
His partner Lee Atwater, his partner Roger Stone. These are legendary names in Republican politics.
And Roger Stone being the person that introduced Trump to Richard Nixon, and Nixon said when he met Trump, I'm paraphrasing, you're going to be president someday.
Yeah.
So all these rats run together. So the way Manafort did that was, apparently, initially, Yanukovych was too obviously pro-Russian, and he was kind of a rumpled Boris Johnson kind of guy. Basically, Paul Manafort cleaned up his act, in terms of, the suits, in terms of the hair, very Trump-like, and getting him to not, to play down and even just ignore or deny any pro-Russian bias, to talk about nationalism and all these, and mom and apple pie and
so Yanukovych did not run as a pro-Putin or pro-Russian candidate. He ran as basically Ukraine first.
And that is so important. He ran as Ukraine first. Trump took the old pro-Nazi slogan of America first, and you're exactly right. So it was not obvious in the first year of Yanukovych.
So what happened when the people figured out that Yanukovych was basically dancing to Putin's tune?
Well, by the second year, it became totally obvious, and the people literally rose up. Yanukovych, on Putin's orders, was having people shot. That brought more people into the streets, and basically, they ran him out of Ukraine. They overran his incredible mansion that was just full of all these Trumpian, extravagant gold and crystal and $300,000 chandeliers and all this. And Yanukovych literally had to flee to Russia. But the interesting thing is, if the Democrats had not captured the House, you could almost make a case that we are in some ways we are today living like Ukraine was in the first year or so under Yanukovych. In other words, the Ukrainians had a president controlled by Moscow. They didn't really realize it.
But he was doing a lot of policies that favored Moscow.
Right.
Which Trump is doing right now.
While at the same time throwing red meat to his base and claiming Ukraine first and, coming up with all these excuses until he could just no longer hide that. And in many ways, we're like that today. I mean, think about this. Everything Trump has done, from the Labor Department to the Defense Department to the Environmental Protection Agency, he's been doing exactly the opposite of what any even moderate Republican president would do. In other words, if you have somebody that had the Education Department is against public education. People that had the Environmental Protection Agency are against protecting the environment. People who run the Department of Labor are against organized labor. In other words, it's almost, if you imagine it like an Avengers-style movie where some alien has infiltrated and is having people attack America from within. That's exactly what Trump totally appears to be doing.
Yeah, he's put arsonists in charge of the fire department.
Exactly. And he's doing that, I firmly believe the evidence shows, under the influence of Putin that go back to Trump's ties
to
Russia.
Well, according to Seth Abramson, it's not just Putin. I mean, he wrote an entire book about how it's also Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia, it's the United Arab Emirates, it's some of the cronies of Netanyahu in Israel, that there was this conspiracy to put Trump in the White House in the first place, which is pretty mind-boggling. I've been doing this show 16 years, and until last year, I'd never endorsed a weight loss product, but I decided to change that after reading about university research into a molecule in olive oil that regulates appetite. My wife convinced me that there was one that was worth sharing, and a year later, I have to say she's right. The key to losing weight, of course, is getting your appetite and those pesky food cravings under control. Once you do that, the rest of it's easy. My producer, Sean, is now trying Riduzone, too. Who doesn't want to lose a few pounds before the holidays? Sean says Riduzone is making it easy for her to stick with her weight loss plan. Just one capsule with breakfast, that's it. Second one for dinner, at dinner for days when you need a little extra help. Sean says when you don't feel hungry, it's a lot easier to make better choices. The only ingredient in riduzone occurs naturally in the body and is completely non-stimulant, and that will really appeal to both Louise and Sean. Listen, if you're looking to lose weight this season, I strongly suggest you give non-prescription riduzone a try. Use the promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, and get up to 65% off plus free shipping. Go to riduzone.com. That's R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com, R-I-D-U-Zone.com, riduzone.com. Promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, riduzone.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're talking about the hidden history of the betrayal of the Kurds by four consecutive Republican presidents. It's mind-boggling. Well, I guess they weren't consecutive, Lamar. Did George W. Bush betray the Kurds or just his daddy?
As soon as you said that, I was about to say, and I'll research this some more later, but largely I think the Kurds were relatively treated well under Bush Jr., but apparently they were promised at some point that they were essentially going to have a homeland, you know, that would be independent in all but name only in northern Iraq.
You know, Biden was pushing for that early in the Obama administration, by the way.
Well, and so, like I say, there are probably people in Kurdish Iraq that would say, yes, that Bush Jr. screwed them over as well. So, right. You know, it may actually be five consecutive Republican presidents that have screwed over those poor people. I guess to get back to Ukraine,
sure.
What do you think the odds are that Trump may literally wind up like Yanukovych? In other words, that once Trump's clear working for Putin, and I agree with you, a lot of people like MBS and others wanted Trump as president, but I think Putin was the primary one in that. I mean, there's literally a paper trail flipping 40,475 votes in the three states where we know that Manafort passed the internal polling data to Putin's ally. That's what won. In other words, 40,000 Hillary supporters stayed home. 40,000 Trump supporters were so angry and ginned up to come out and vote. That's what literally gave Trump the presidency.
Right.
And so I think the more stuff that's going to come out about all these dictators, but especially about Putin, I do wonder, I don't rule out that Trump could eventually have to flee the country as people mass and overrun, you know, Mar-a-Lago or something.
Even if people don't, I mean, if enough evidence of enough crimes comes out and they implicate not just Trump, but, you know, you've got Jared Kushner and the whole thing with MBS and Qatar, you know, and Kushner ending up with $1 billion out of the Qatari heavily invested fund. You've got Ivanka Trump, who was nearly charged by the New York State prosecutor for real estate fraud and financial fraud. You got Don Jr. and Eric involved in a number of these frauds. It wouldn't surprise me if the entire Trump crime family flees the country.
I would say for me, and I'm curious to get your take, to me, I would say there's about a 5% chance of that happening.
I'd put it in that neighborhood. Yeah.
Okay.
It's higher than zero. It's certainly higher than zero. I mean, it's going to depend on what comes out, and it's also going to depend to a certain amount on the elections. I think, you know, the elections are going to happen in the first week of November of next year, and then, you know, a month later the inauguration happens. And if in that gap the Democrats overwhelmingly take the White House, the Senate, and the House, then that would increase the probability that the Trump crime family will flee the country because of their fear of retribution. During the last break, you asked me what I thought were the possibilities of Trump pardoning himself and his associates, the rest of the Trump crime family, versus cutting a deal like Nixon did with Jerry Ford to have Pence pardon him. The Constitution says that during a period when the president is being impeached, which has formally happened, you know, it started almost two weeks ago, that when the president is being impeached, he loses his power of pardon. So, you know, if he were to win in the Senate, if he were to win a trial, or if they couldn't get the impeachment resolution passed through the House, I suppose it's possible he would pardon himself and the rest of his family. I think it's more likely, though, if he leaves office, that it would be Pence. But that's just my thinking. What's yours?
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think the odds are will actually officially impeach Trump? I put those odds at 90 to 95% that the House will impeach Trump. Where are you at on that?
I would agree with those numbers. And the thing that makes me feel relatively emphatic about that is that Nancy Pelosi has been very, very, very careful, very methodical. She wasn't willing to go there until she had no choice. So, yeah, I think that's real high. The question is what's going to happen in the Senate.
Well, but now, let's go back to the House, because I'm saying 90-95% because, you know, a couple of different stories have been floated by, you know, Trump insiders, supposedly, that Trump is so paranoid about, you know, having, you know, the impeachment on his record. Because even Richard Nixon, you know, the Judiciary Committee had passed the articles. But in other words, you know, the whole House had not, you know,
right. He
voted.
Was never officially impeached.
Right. And that Trump is so loath to have that on his record that there is a chance, I think it's only a 5-10% chance, that if it looks like for sure that vote is going to happen,
he'll pull a Nixon.
Well, he'll either pull a Nixon or what I see, because he's much, I don't know, he's street smart, but he's not nearly the political, you know, genius that Nixon was. Is that I think he would fake a heart attack, fake a medical reason to have to resign the presidency before that happens. Because my understanding is, and again, you may know better, is that if he did in fact resign before the official vote was taken, even if he resigned, you know, hours before it was taken, then it becomes kind of a moot point, so to speak.
I think he's much less worried about history. He has said on two different occasions he doesn't care how he's thought of by history. He'll be dead. I think he's more afraid that the impeachment inquiry will reach the point where he can no longer hide his tax returns, and we and the entire world will discover that he's been broke for at least 20 years, and he's been living off money from basically foreign mobsters. And that's what he's afraid is going to come out. And the whole House of Cards will collapse once everybody realizes that he's broke. But the thing that I really fear is that he will start World War III.
That's on my mental
list. And I put that at about 20% right now.
Is that he will... So you put war at 20%. I would agree. I'd say maybe as high as 30%. But yeah, definitely in that range. As part of that, I could see him hugely overreacting to some terrorist attack or attempted attack.
Yep.
And I don't rule out that he could actually win the next election, especially, you know, if the Senate votes not to impeach him, so he's off. He's going to say...
Yeah. And if he wins, he will be unstoppable. I mean, that'll be the end of democracy in the United States. Lamar, I'm sorry, we've got to wrap it up, but, once again, Lamar's book, Watergate, The Hidden History, and The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination, brilliant writing. Lamar Waldron, thanks so much for dropping by with us today, Lamar.
Thank you so much, Tom. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Bye.
We'll be back. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That includes you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.